listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media that is dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your creator and host, and during this live broadcast, we invite you to interact with us here on our chat on both emotionalpro.com, the radio page there, or on blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living. We also have a toll-free number, 800-630-7858. I know you're going to have a lot of questions today. 800-630-7858. In Elmira, New York, in the mid-60s, Jane Roberts sat with her husband, Robert Butts, in the evenings, and what they did on those evenings was most unusual for those times. Their endeavors began the major shift of human consciousness that's so evident in today's world. Jane Roberts was channeling. She was channeling Seth. In fact, Seth dictated books, which were meticulously recorded by hand by Robert Butts, and Seth set out ideas that contradicted the best psychological thinking of the day, such as the notion that we create our own reality, which we hadn't run into before, and that what we believe shapes the fabric of our experience. Today, we have some scientific proof of some of these ideas. For example, read the Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton, Ph.D. So many of the things that were told to us in the 60s by Seth are now being verified through our research. So today's one-of-a-kind broadcast. What we're doing is we're exploring more deeply the ideas offered by Seth through Jane Roberts that have supported the enormous awakening of human consciousness that's happening every day. And to do that, I've invited once again the very wonderful Paul Helfrich, who can be found on the web at paulhelfrich.com. That's P-A-U-L-H-E-L-F-R-I-C-H. And for more than 30 years, he's been exploring the Seth materials, attending and presenting at Seth conferences since 1996. He was the admin for the SethNet email list from 1998 to 2009, and he's a preeminent Seth scholar. Regarding Seth, he's also an essay author, lecturer, and workshop presenter, and has recently begun a series of online courses, which we'll talk with him about too, about the channeling phenomenon and integral psychology. He's also a musician, and his 2003 Mindscapes music CD is available on iTunes, Rhapsody, and CD Baby. So, Paul Helfrich, we are delighted to have you with us today on Full Power Living to go deeply into the Seth materials. Welcome.
Thank you, Eileen. Good morning, and it's a pleasure to be here again with you and your audience.
Great. Well, you know, in your previous appearances on Full Power Living, we looked at the radical, and I say that for his time and also for now, the radical things that Seth put forward for us that have been playing a big part in the consciousness change that we've been going through. And the biggest thrust, I think, of his work was to put forth the fact that we create our own reality. And this actually is a lot bigger and deeper concept than most people imagine, and I want to get into those deeper aspects with you. And to begin, I want to say that Seth isn't talking about the little old me that's talking to you right now as the creator of my reality. I'm not the sole creator. He's talking about a lot more that is me. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And that's why we use the iceberg analogy that we've talked about previously to represent the larger multidimensional non-physical parts of the human being, which are conventionally known as the soul or spirit, to represent that.
Mm-hmm. Good. So the iceberg, the idea, just to review briefly, is that iceberg has more under the surface than on top, usually, and so there's a lot more under the surface than we normally think about. correct?
That's right. And the tip of the iceberg represents the little me that you were just referring to that lives and dies in the world of time in a single lifetime. But the submerged portion of the self turns out to be really, really, really big and vast and eternal and is there to help us through every part of our life experience. And so learning to connect with that is part of the challenge of working with the ideas in the Seth material.
Well, to draw loosely from the beliefs of the Australian Aborigines, our reality, according to Seth, was initially dreamed into existence. Is that correct?
That's correct. And in the Seth material, there's a chapter in Dreams, Evolution, and Value Fulfillment that's titled Before the Beginning. And just that title by itself is a nice Zen koan or paradox, because how can there be anything before the beginning? The beginning's the beginning, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and in the Aboriginal mythology and their creation myth, they talk about a dream time and knowing that from the dream time, which is non-physical for starters, at least in linear time terms, the physical world emerged gradually from that time. And Seth's version is very short, is relatively short. It's only five chapters in that book, so it's not overly detailed as there are in other accounts in the metaphysical literature, but it's consistent with those stories. And it says essentially that we dreamed ourselves into existence and that mind is primary and that physical matter is created by mind with a capital M.
Mm-hmm. And now, as the dream sort of differentiated and came into its own, families of consciousness developed. I find this very intriguing. There were like nine families, and each one of the families, so-called, had an innate intention, which is what helps us to create reality. And as I understand it, they're Sumafi, Milumet.
I hope I'm not butchering this.
Gramada, Vold, Ilda, Sumari, Tumold, Zuli, and Borladim. And I identify with Tumold for myself. So using Tumold, could you tell us how these families' intention works as you understand
sure.
it?
Yes, absolutely. Just to tie in from the creation myth, which, by the way, I feel is an important part of what's emerging in the what we call the emerging new worldview, is a new type of creation myth that before the beginning, consciousness as a whole, with a capital C, separated itself, fragmented itself into nine regions or areas or types of innate intent. And it's kind of interesting because that innate intention is what's used to create a universe that has galaxies and solar systems and planets and moons and so on, and then human beings and creatures that end up evolving on those. So back to before the beginning, these nine families of consciousness, as Seth called them, were very much involved, and they are our ancestors, our progenitor souls, you can think of them that way. And we're very much involved in the creation of the world and the continual creation of the world. And so of the nine, as you mentioned, Tumold, these are Seth's terms for them. These are known, by the way, in the esoteric literature. So Seth didn't invent them, and we have to wonder if these are real, if we're not making them up or in grave error about these things. They must have an eternal existence, and therefore various cultures through history, the mystics and the seers in them, should have been able to tap into and translate, verify, and have a version of them, and that is the case. And we can talk about that later, but I just wanted to mention that this is not just something made up and out of the blue. So you refer to yourself, Eileen, as Tumold, and within Seth's typology of these nine, those are essentially the healers and have a natural healing intent and a natural way of working with human energy. And this is in its human expression. We also have a soul or inner self or what Seth calls the entity layer of expression too. These are two complementary areas that work very closely together. But in its human expression and in its practical application for us today, right now, understanding that intent is germane to knowing what your purpose in life is, why you're here, why you chose to be born. And myself, I hold what's called the Sumafi intent, which is basically knowledge sharing, teaching, dealing with information and maintaining its integrity and passing it along to subsequent generations with low distortion. So just to summarize then, it's a very big topic, right? It ties into the creation myth. It ties into the mass creation of the universe. And when we come back to personal reality, which Seth always does, he concentrates on you creating your reality, knowing what your family of consciousness is. It goes a long way to helping you understand what your purpose is in life. It's foundational.
Mm-hmm.
And just wanted to... Go ahead.
No, I want to hear that. That's great. Go ahead.
Just one additional thought. In terms of therapy and psychological, emotional, physical health and pathology, when we get out of touch with our intent, when we attempt to willfully force something that is not within our soul and within our soul's heritage, that leads to conflict and problems. And so this multidimensional system, this iceberg self, will, through coincidence and impulses, perhaps dreams, and even the occasional vision and other psychic phenomena, poltergeist and so on, try to, you know, provide a way that doesn't violate our free will. The tip of the iceberg has its own type of free will here, but still attempts to guide it back to becoming in tune. And you can use that musical and acoustical reference of when we're in tune, when we're really beautifully in tune and humming away with our natural intent. That's when things become effortless. And it seems like those people are lucky and they get all the breaks because they're resonating at their soul frequency naturally and not conflicting with it. So things tend to go easy. So part of therapy then becomes finding a way to get back in touch with that intent and working with that too, and all of the beliefs and emotions and other things that go along with that.
So then for encouragement, is the notion that we can always get back in touch and connect with ourselves and straighten that out, that we don't have to stay in hell, correct?
Absolutely, and that's what I call the half-filled cup, and that's folk wisdom. You know, that no matter how bad things get, whether it's a relationship situation, your health, your financial situation, your career, and so on, no matter how hard and how terrible it gets, even at the very penultimate moment, next to last moment, you still have the power to use that iceberg self system to radically change things in the moment. Mm-hmm. And that gets into the belief structures that you hold. Really, the psychology of reality creation is very, very important. And Seth hammered away at that. In fact, he dedicated one of his books entirely to that. The Nature of Personal Reality is his best-selling book, actually, of all the books.
That's the one that just turned my life upside down in a very good way, I must say. My copy is very worn. just briefly for the iceberg selves, and I know there's more to it than this, but essentially we could think of three aspects: the personality, the subconscious, and the entity. The personality being what is known as the outer ego, the entity is the larger, under the surface, connected with all that is self, that's the inner ego, and the subconscious being the connector, if I understand that.
You're spot on. That's exactly right. The subconscious is a mediating function and very important because it sort of blurs the boundary between physical reality, since it's very much a part of that, and then it blurs into the non-physical vastness of the rest of all that is, yes.
Mm-hmm. And so when we want to create our own reality, or when we focus on creating our own reality, we need to be working with all of these. We need to have some balance. I think you're very clear that, or Seth was very clear that we don't want to eradicate our ego, as a lot of people are now talking about. We want to work with our outer ego, but we also need to resonate, if you will, with these deeper aspects of ourselves.
Right. And so you covered a lot of ground there, but just in general, right, working with the outer egoic self is very, very important. And we're in a process of collective and personal evolution and development. So we realize that our egoic self through our lifetime is widening. You could use that term to express it. It's widening its awareness, and that's why learning to connect with what Seth and Jane Roberts worked on as altered states of consciousness, including channeling, but this includes dreams and self-hypnosis and things like this, and the alpha state that's right before falling asleep, that's highly creative, and states like that to work from the outer egoic perspective. And I also want to add, it's from the Sethian perspective, it's axiomatic. You cannot not create your reality. At every instance of every moment in your life, you are creating your reality. You can get to a point where you don't believe that and you hold beliefs that contradict that. But the fact is, according to Seth, this iceberg self, and I have to say, in my own 30-plus years, 35 years of working with this material and doing the practices, I have verified at least the outlines of what Seth is claiming to be true, that this iceberg self is there and it's working this way. So in terms of the outer ego and our little self as we go through life, it's important to connect with the larger self whenever possible. But as you said earlier, that we don't want to annihilate the ego. There's a lot of distorted beliefs that come from distorted interpretations of Eastern teachings, where the outer ego is called the false self and the inner ego is called the authentic self or the real self. And you can get really wound up about that as you try to work through those beliefs, and you end up denying the validity of your own individuality. And Seth is very clear consistently that we want to maintain and nurture and develop our individuality.
Mm-hmm. That's a comfort to me. I like that. And I think Seth also said there are four different ways we can explain creating or go about creating: the metaphysical, the explanation through physics, through biology and psychology. So you don't have to understand it in a particular way.
Right, and that fourfold structure is really important. As I've worked with the material and summarized it, there is a physics of reality creation, so that's at the quantum level, where we're dealing with fields, electrical fields and light and so on. Then there's the biology of reality creation. You mentioned Bruce Lipton earlier. He's a wonderful source. I know he knows the Seth material and has incorporated Seth's ideas into his work. So there's the cellular level there, where my cells, all human cells, all animal cells, all plant cells, all cellular life on the planet are intermeshed in a vast inner communications network, and in fact, the cellular level throughout the galaxy and the universe are all intimately connected at that level, and then, of course, at the physics level. And then we've been talking about the psychology, a third part of the fourfold structure, which is very big and emphasized with Seth, where we get into beliefs, emotions, feelings, imagination, impulses, expectation, and those things. And then the fourth is the larger spiritual or metaphysics, the metaphysics of reality creation, which is that map that is handed down to us through all of the perennial wisdom traditions in all its different translations. But it basically says you have a physical existence, you have a non-physical existence, you have physical senses that can perceive the physical world, and you also have a rich heritage of having inner senses that can be developed to perceive the inner world and validate that for yourself, and to start to use it more consciously for yourself, and in the process becoming a more conscious co-creator with yourself, with others, and with all that is.
Mm-hmm. Well, in my day-to-day existence, I will rely on my beliefs and my thoughts and my emotions to create my reality, and we need to take a break right now. But when we come back, I'd like to talk about those. All right?
Great.
We're talking today with Paul Helfrich, PhD, who's an author, lecturer, musician, and Seth scholar for the past 30 years. And we're talking about the wonderful explanations given to us by Seth, channeled nearly half a century ago, that have been awakening us to who we really are and what we know and what we can do in terms of creating our own reality. You're listening to Full Power Living. Stay with us.
Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want? To take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes? Or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. I want you to talk with us now on our chats at emotionalpro.com on the radio page or at blogtalkradio.com/FPL. And remember, if you miss us live, you can download archived podcasts from our radio show page, or you can subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. And thank you so much for telling your friends and family about all they can discover through Full Power Living, as well as for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. Next week, September 15th, Michael Grinder is returning to talk with us about the power and understanding of nonverbal communication that he talks about in his book, The Elusive Obvious. We have a full lineup of guests for you now extending to the end of 2011, so check the top of our radio page for a full listing and don't miss a single episode. When you have a minute, check out yourtango.com, a relationship site on which I'm an expert. I've got a series of blog articles there on anger where I've been talking about the difference between managing and mastering anger, what anger really is, and I give you suggestions on how to work with anger in its many manifestations. So check it out. Our guest today is Paul Helfrich, who for more than 30 years has studied the Seth materials. And he shared what he's learned with the world in the form of lectures, e-list administration, writing, and so forth. And, Paul, I wanted you to take just a minute before we get back into our regular questions to talk about two things. One is any personal appearances that you have upcoming, and two is the online course that you started.
Great. Thank you, Eileen. First of all, locally here in the Santa Clarita, Valencia area of Los Angeles, I will be appearing at the Keneally Healing Light Center on September 28th to talk about the Seth material and in relation to the law of attraction, and in other words, Seth's version of The Secret. And I'm also working on presenting a five-week class there, October through November of this year. That will be 5 2-hour classes. So if you're in the Santa Clarita, Valencia area, please join us there. And secondly, I have developed an online course called Seth Revealed, Unlock the Secrets of Conscious Creation. It's a broad overview to all of the 46 books of Jane Roberts, 30 of which are on the Seth material. The other 16 are some of Jane's own fiction, poetry, a child's book, and her own aspect psychology. So the course covers all of what we were talking about earlier in terms of the fourfold physics, biology, psychology, and metaphysics of reality creation. It also covers then this iceberg self, and then your multidimensional self in relation to the world. And the third component of that is how we can all get along, or the ethical component. So this is integrated over 8 classes in a webinar format. Check out our website at newworldview.com with all the details, and we're registering now. Our fall semester begins September 20th, so we hope you'll join us there.
Newworldview.com. That's good. All right. So we were talking before the break about, well, I was hoping to talk about beliefs and thoughts and emotions, and I know we've talked about these before, so I would just ask you to briefly talk about how these work in our creation of our own reality.
Right. Seth outlined a taxonomy of types of beliefs, and the principal one is what he calls core beliefs. And in a simple way to summarize that, you have a single belief. Then we make that plural beliefs. So there are satellite beliefs that orbit around any particular belief. And then we have a belief system, which is a big structure of beliefs. And an interesting sideline here, too, is there is an emerging science of memetics, M-E-M-E-T-I-C-S, memetics, which is an attempt by Richard Dawkins, a well-known biologist and evolutionary theorist, a Darwinian, and probably would poo-poo much of the Seth material. But in his early work, he tried to create a psychological analog that he called a meme that's a counterpart to a gene. A gene carries physical information in the body, color of hair, eyes, size of bone structure, and so on. And he wanted something of an idea. He wanted to capture, and he knew that culture, the cultural values co-create reality too, and he created something called memetics. So I just wanted to make that connection to our audience too. That's something you can look up, and there's a whole emerging science of belief systems that complements the Sethian approach as well. Hmm. So Seth helps us to start to identify and look at these foundational core belief systems. He talks about then how every belief that we hold, we need to question, because they can become invisible, so he calls them invisible beliefs, because we just assume them to be true. And just an example is, the sun will rise tomorrow. I believe that to be true. It's a truth of mine. But is it an absolute truth? Are these beliefs absolutely true? And as you get into personal beliefs, like people dislike me, I can never do what I want to do, I always have bad luck, on the negative side or on the positive side, these beliefs start to gather other birds of a feather, and they cluster and they build into systems. So it's important to learn to work with them in that regard. So that's just an opening way of looking at belief systems. Then the strategies that we use are a bunch of exercises to start to identify and work with the beliefs that we hold, and Seth strongly recommends journaling as a practice, and I know that from a therapy point of view, journaling is very important, because it brings into consciousness from the subconscious, and when they're in, beliefs are existing in your subconscious mind, they tend to be invisible and can have a continual effect on your behaviors that can lead into pathological situations, and yet on the other hand can lead into wonderful, healthy, functional situations as well. And a point I wanted to make earlier too is, in terms of you create your reality in terms of this multidimensional iceberg self, reality creation itself is neutral. Whether it's positive or negative, whether it's healthy or pathological, whether it's good or evil, and these dualities, is entirely up to the human being and the outer ego that's working with that. So we start to look at our beliefs and work with identifying, noticing how these beliefs work with us. And then Seth guides us to start to change them. And he points out that we use what he calls natural hypnosis, which is concentrating the mind and we concentrate on the beliefs that we hold to be true. So our core belief systems are things we take to be absolutely true. And if we start to question them and find that they're no longer serving us, this is a way that therapeutically we can get back into balance. And he points out that the process is what he calls natural hypnosis. Another thing, and a very, very important takeaway, I mean, if you were to try to boil it down to one thing, which is impossible, but I would say that what he calls the point of power is in the present. Use the present as the point of power, and it's a foundational exercise and something that you come back to time and time again over the years because it's so important. Eckhart Tolle wrote a bestseller called The Power of Now. It's the same principle of focusing your mind in the now. That's where you identify a belief. That's where a belief is being expressed, and so on. And just to take a side thread, beliefs are the root of our emotions. So emotions are not primary. They are secondary. They are a secondary reflection or a construction of a primary belief or core belief system that we hold. So, and what's interesting is in terms of our emotional states, they are just that. They are states. You can't be happy and sad simultaneously. In a physical sense, you can't be drunk and sober at the same time. These are different states that we're in. So our emotions reflect a state, which means they're temporary, and they come and go. And so as we're learning to deal with our emotions and doing the belief work, Seth strongly recommends to not repress them, not deny them. And being a man in this culture, I have been taught from childhood that men don't cry. Real men don't cry. Keep a stiff upper lip. Suck it up. Get tough. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. And that's all well and good and serves a purpose towards an end. But in the process, men in our culture learn to repress their emotions. So Seth teaches us to allow those emotions to come out. And to think of them like a summer storm. They come and they go. And it's a state, so it's temporary. And then, later on, you can do the work to trace back from that emotional outburst what are the core beliefs and what are the satellite beliefs around that belief system that's having an impact to create that emotional situation. And in terms of therapy and anger, expressions of anger, violence, and other dysfunctional addiction behaviors and so on, all of these are tied back to beliefs that are held, and these beliefs can be changed. So coming back from my sideways thread, changing beliefs, Seth talks about changing beliefs, and he talks about the present as the point of power, and there's an actual practice where you simply take 5 minutes and fully bring all of your imaginative forces to bear in your body, your emotional state, and you even visualize everything in terms of the point of power is in the present. It is where I intersect with the world. It is where I act, where my free will comes in. It is where I create, where my divine gift of creation and co-creation exists in its fullness. And I have a choice in every moment to create more fully or less fully, more consciously or less consciously, more automatic through automatic processes or less automatic, and where I have a choice in every moment. And so as we change our beliefs, that's how we heal. That's how, and then if we can get down to a core belief, say, of very low self-esteem, I'm not that smart, I'm not that good-looking, I can't do this, and you actually reverse the energetic pull of that belief by saying, you know, I am very smart in this area. In fact, I have tremendous gifts in this area. And you can just feel how when you start concentrating in that area, it changes you energetically. And it's changing a belief. So beliefs themselves have a neutral state where they're just passive. He calls them passive beliefs. They're just waiting. And then when the conscious mind, your outer ego, guiding it, puts energy into that is, oh, I'm not that good, I'm going to fail, I'm never any good, I can't do this, or the opposite. Man, I am really good at this, I love doing this, I feel so good, and I'm helping others, I'm helping myself, and at the end of the day, I feel so accomplished. Just energetically concentrating on that is a path that we take when doing belief work. So I'll leave it there.
That's a lot. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I would just comment that when I first encountered this notion through the nature of personal reality, I developed a method for myself, which I've used with clients, therapy clients, for years, which is my understanding was that whatever I experience in life is revealing to me what my beliefs are. So whenever I have an experience, I say, what would I have to believe in order to create this experience? And considering that psychology for years said you can't tell your own inner workings, you won't know what your beliefs are, that was very powerful. So, for example, I was able to uncover a core belief that I was unlovable. And, of course, a corollary belief to that was people aren't going to like me when I meet them and I can't talk to people well and all that sort of thing. And it was also really important to me to understand that if I go back and change the core belief, then the corollary or ancillary beliefs also shift.
Exactly. And you know, we mentioned earlier the law of attraction, so to speak. That's something that's out there in the popular parlance and culture these days. That is very true. There is a resonance that occurs. So when you change that belief to concentrate on, I am lovable, I'm attractive, I can help people, I can be very useful in a relationship with someone, and I can work at this, and so on and so forth, that will resonate with someone to get them into a similar state. But on the other hand, again, it's a balancing act. We can go into the shadows, and there is a partial truth in conventional psychology of saying, not that we can't know what's in the subconscious mind, and perhaps that's where, you know, Freud and his lineages created a priesthood that said you must have a professional mediating layer to get at your subconscious. You can't do it yourself. Well, Seth says nonsense to that. You can train yourself with practice to penetrate into the subconscious at times and dig into these things and gird yourself for this exploration, because you will penetrate the submerged part of the iceberg and you will be surprised. You may be shocked even what you find down there, because, and I'm just going into the area of our innate bisexual nature, the masculine feminine traits, where do they come from in this big psychological structure, and our own sexual orientation and preferences, and that if in a reincarnational framework we live other lifetimes as a woman or a man, if you're, let's say, a woman in this lifetime and very firmly identifying with your female energy in this lifetime, and you start to do some of this work and penetrate into the subconscious, and suddenly you may have a dream as a man, being a man, or having masculine attributes or whatnot, even living a masculine lifetime, it can be shocking to you. So you need to prepare yourself and work gradually as you go on this exploration. It really is a great adventure. It really is a personal hero's journey to take on this kind of work. And it takes concentration and persistence over months and years. So I'm here to tell you all that this is not a quick fix. This map that Seth presents is very rich. Again, Jane Roberts passed in 1984, so his voice was silenced then. And it's only been, 27 years since that we've been unpacking the material. A lot of it's been published posthumously, so there's still a lot to learn about this. So I just want to have a caveat there. But if you're willing to do the work and be consistent with it, I can all but guarantee your success, that you will penetrate deeper and you will make connections and you will improve whatever situation you need to, whether it's a relationship, a health, your abundance, money, and creativity, your challenges, your career, anything this can be applied to.
I have a question that's been bothering me that I'm hoping you can help me with. And Seth says that we have emotions. That we have coordinate points that pulse energy, and those are activated by emotions, and that beliefs always generate thoughts and emotions, and not vice versa. But in today's world, we have cognitive therapy, which is very big today, and it teaches that thought thoughts generate emotions. How would, in your understanding, how would Seth explain this, or is cognitive therapy not, I have trouble with, you know, some parts of it I understand, but I have trouble with cognitive therapy because I really agree that beliefs generate thoughts and emotions and not the other way around. But is there a way through this?
There is. Some of it's semantics, so we have to be clear how we're defining what a thought is, what a belief is, what emotions are. And then some of this, too, is the map of, you know, is the iceberg self a reality to that cognitive lineage and their therapeutic approach? They may only recognize the tip of the iceberg in the physical brain. And so we know that we can observe thoughts are coming. And we can even make the connection and debate, I would think, rationally that, okay, well, there's a belief involved, and we can articulate that belief, love, emotions, relationships, morality, right and wrong, those sorts of things all trigger thoughts. But Seth is pointing back to beliefs and to this multidimensional structure, and that it's key. That's a key paradigmatic shift, I think, between these. So when you're just dealing with thoughts, I think you're dealing with a much narrower view or a narrower model of the human being itself. It's pretty much a materialist, physical, five senses only, and mental intellect is all that's accepted and allowed from the therapeutic perspective. So the thought that ideas in terms of beliefs, codified as beliefs, and in the brain is a key organ in filtering the soul while we are physical. It's crucial, as we know from research that shows with brain injury and so on, that our ability to play music or speak or walk or move is severely impacted if we have brain injury. So Seth is not denying the importance of the physical construction, but he's saying it's not primary. And perhaps, Eileen, it's looking at what's primary and what's secondary, and there's where the disagreement may be. They're claiming that thoughts are primary, and Seth is saying they are secondary, and they are an artifact of a belief structure that goes back into this iceberg self, and as a matter of fact, is part of your astral body or astral self that's part of the dreaming self that has existed beyond the physical realm, and emotions and thoughts are traced back to that astral structure. And in fact, that's the structure that is used when we die and we engage our after-death experience, according to Seth. So that gets into another area, and these therapies don't incorporate any thought or understanding of the human astral body.
Wonderful.
I would suspect.
Wonderful explanation. Thank you so much. Well, you have led right into my next question that I want to talk with you about when we come back from our break, and that is how lucid dreaming and projections of consciousness can help us prepare for our own death, plus enhance our everyday life before death. So will you talk with me about that when we come back?
Absolutely. One of my favorite topics.
Okay. So we're talking today with Paul Helfrich, and you can find out about his course at newworldview.com. And we'll talk more about Seth and his incredible ideas when we come back here on Full Power Living.
Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Everybody feels anger, but if you don't learn to deal with it, anger can mess up your life. It can cause you relationship problems, difficulties on the job, or create health problems. If you want a way to understand and work with anger that's simple yet so powerful it helps you to put an end to the specific angers that are messing up your life, then you'll want to get a copy of a mini course I've created for you entitled Reduce Anger Now. With it, I want you to be able to figure out what's stimulating the anger you feel and have an easy way to change that anger so you can dramatically reduce the anger in your life. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, longtime psychotherapist, coach, and anger expert. I've helped thousands of people to master anger, and I want you to begin to become an anger master in your life. Order Reduce Anger Now at the store, www.emotionalpro.com. That's www.emotionalpro.com. Welcome back. We're with Paul Helfrich, who for more than 30 years has studied the Seth materials. And you can be sure to note this down. He's at newworldview.com. Now, Paul, before the break, I asked you if we could talk about the effects of learning more or working with lucid dreaming and projections of consciousness. In 2005, my sister died. I was with her at the moment of death, and I talked with her about the process of turning loose that she was going through. And I would love to understand more about what that whole process is about and how we can facilitate it with lucid dreaming and projections of consciousness.
Sure, and perhaps our bridging belief into this area is to, I'm losing my train of thought here, that when we do belief work, when we do dream work, we're also working on our belief work. So we're taking everything we learn from just doing the belief work, and as we get into studying our dreams, we take everything and apply that into interpreting our dreams and working with our dreams, and we learn that the dream state is an intermediate realm into the afterlife and into other dimensions of reality. So Seth provides a lot of introductory exercises. And we begin with simple dream recall. Many people do not even remember their dreams because we're taught they're not important, or it's the mind going crazy and that sort of thing. So dreaming itself is something that goes on constantly, which is another interesting Sethian idea that right now our dreaming selves are awake and active, but our waking self is tuned very narrowly into this physical zone of physical consciousness through the five major physical senses and so on. But the dreaming self is dreaming right now. It is present. It is aware to some degree of what's going on here, and it's a bridging self to the inner self as well. So we have these, we're sort of like nested Russian dolls, these different parts of ourselves, and that it's really, it gets to be like a hall of mirrors at times when you're just seeing all these reflections and realizing that, oh my God, I'm so much bigger than I've been taught to believe. So just backtracking a bit, we're taught that our dreams aren't important, so that's a belief that we have to get over, a hurdle to get over as we start to do dream work. And that remembering our dreams, so there's practices to start remembering our dreams and gain facility. And the idea is, well, at least in my case, I can only speak to my experience after 35 years, is that now when I come out of sleep state into my physical body, 99% of the times I track that transition. I immediately remember what my dreams were. And I sit there and I've trained myself not to move any muscles to engage the physical body to wake it up anymore, to sort of try and stay half in, so to speak, and remember as much of the dream imagery as possible. And another technique is to have a recorder by the bedside, a voice recorder. They're fairly affordable these days so that you don't have to forget something, or if you're married and sharing the bed with your partner, you can get up and go into the bathroom and record something there. Both my wife and I have recorders and do this sort of thing ourselves. So starting to weaken the gap between waking and sleeping self, I guess, is the long-range goal of the dreaming practices. And then we find that in time, we try to do what are called inducing lucid dreams. And a lucid dream is simply being awake while in your dream body. And according to Seth, we have three astral bodies. So you're awake and you're dreaming in these astral bodies, but you become as awake as you are now, and to some degree you know that it on the outside in physical reality it's September 8th, you know what your birthday is, what your age is. Sometimes I get those things wrong, which is interesting and part of tracking it and why it's important to journal and record these things and keep a record as we go and try to make connections between them. But in lucid state, according to Seth, there's a clarity that comes, and it widens the structure of the outer ego. So actually we're taking the outer egoic self into the dream state and bringing it to bear. But we have to remember that the physics of the dream state are radically different than the physics of waking life. So for example, if I step in front of a bus, I am going to have severe traumatic injury to my body, and most likely it will no longer house my soul and I will die. But in a dream state, I can walk in front of a bus and feel the bus go through me and experience that experience. I can walk through walls. I can fly. So the physics, part of it is starting to learn and work with dream physics and also dream beliefs. So we take our waking belief work that we've done and understanding, and we start to bring it into the dream state to some degree. And we can make requests. We can, you know, there's all kinds of wonderful work. And I want to mention Stephen LaBerge and his Lucidity Institute at Stanford. I'm not sure if he's still at Stanford any longer, but he's one of the people who helped legitimize this and brought science to it, and so on. So we can incubate and use lucid dreaming to practice a piano, a sonata, or a performance. If you're giving a speech at work, you know, or something the next day, you can practice it, you can resolve issues, you can do spiritual work, you can meet deceased relatives, you can request that and see what happens, and so on. And then there's also a distinction that we make between lucid dreaming and a projection of consciousness, that what distinguishes a projection form, and I'm not a total master of this, so take what I say with a grain of salt, but in the projection experience, you wake up in your physical body in a state of sleep paralysis. And if you don't know what that is, you can really be freaked out because you're awake now, you're in your body in bed, and you cannot move. And this is an evolutionary state that's very natural to all mammalian life forms. So sleep paralysis is intended to make us not react to the dream state when we're vividly dreaming, what's called rapid eye movement and other states. So in the projection form, then, it's called a vibrational state. It feels like an electrical current is running through your spine to the back of your head into the occipital lobe and inner portions of your brain. And you separate, literally separate from the body and what I call pierce a veil. And suddenly there you are, fully focused egoic self with your belief systems, but in your astral body you can turn around and look at the bed and see your body there, and then you can, through the power of thought and concentration, simply think of a location. And for me, I think of my childhood home because it's an area of great safety and nurturing for me. Oftentimes I can just imagine my front yard, my bedroom, and poof, I'm right there, and the dream experience continues from there. So I've kind of gone hyperlinked a little bit around this big area, but learning to induce these kinds of experiences is a kind of spiritual science, and it validates through your own direct experience. I mean, as far as you know, in the listening audience today, I'm just telling you an amazing story, and I could be lying to you. I could be full of hot air. So I encourage you to verify or falsify my statements for yourself through your own experience. And this is what Seth does. This is at the core of Seth's teaching. So I'll just stop there, and hopefully you have some more questions.
All right. Well, you know, I have a personal question. It's very, very quick because I've been puzzled about it. Maybe you can elucidate it. It's been years since I've had a nightmare. And my husband, by comparison, has nightmares frequently. And my own thought on it is that I have changed my beliefs. My world doesn't seem so unsafe to me anymore. And he has not changed some of those beliefs. He has enemies in his dreams. And I know that Seth says that we are living in an inherently safe world.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, we got some music here. Can you hear that?
No, I'm not hearing it. So.
Oh, okay. Well, keep going then. I'm hearing some strange music. You know, is it possible that when you change your beliefs in your small self or your core beliefs, that you don't need to have such dangerous dreams anymore?
Yes, in my experience, that's absolutely true. It bears
right. Truth.
So that, you know, and you think of a belief when it has energy, you can use a metaphor of birds in a bird cage. Whether it's a sparrow-sized belief, so it's there, or a hummingbird-sized belief, or a little baby bird-sized belief, or a giant turkey buzzard-sized belief, or a pterodactyl-sized belief, that's how much energy it has. And if you're buying into the conventional worldview, where it's constantly a half-empty cup, there's not enough money, we have to be at war with someone, you know, all these things. Nightmares abound, and you're dealing with fears. And as Seth says, all of our emotional expressions can be traced back to beliefs. So, you know, if your husband's open to doing the dream work and working with those dream symbols, he will identify those beliefs, and then he has a choice to change them and change mm-hmm. and neutralize them and change their impact on him and sleep more soundly.
Mm-hmm. That's been my thought, and I've never had a way to really verify it or not, but I must say I enjoy not having nightmares.
Yes.
This is not enough time, Paul, but we have to draw to a close here, and I wonder if there's anything, any particular thing you'd like to say here before we end the show. Is there any particular thing you want people to remember?
Well, sure, that what we've been talking about today and in the previous visits is available in this online class that is available now. And our early bird registration ends September 13th. So check out newworldview.com. It's an 8-week course. You can take the course up to 3 times in a year. We have a money-back guarantee. There's all the information is on the website. If you have any questions, please contact us. If you'd like to go into detail and you're ready to do some of the work, the challenging work involved, we'd love to have you join us.
It sounds really wonderful. I'm going to check into it and see if I can carve out the time to do such. Well, Paul, I want to thank you for being one of the keepers of this material for us. You're doing a wonderful function, and thank you so much for generously giving your time so that the rest of us can understand all that we are and all that we may be capable of better. And I thank you for being here with us again on Full Power Living. It's just a real pleasure to talk with you.
My pleasure, and thank you for having me, Eileen.
Great. So don't forget, next week, September 15th, Michael Grinder is returning to talk with us about the power and understanding of nonverbal communication. Check on our Emotional Pro Radio page for all the wonderful shows that are coming up, and then join us live on Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Time or noon Eastern Time for more powerful experiences here on Full Power Living. I would like to wish happy birthday to my wonderful daughter-in-law, Ann Lambert. Today is her birthday. Makes me cry. She gave me the honor and the pleasure of attending the birth of her 2 children, which was a fantastic gift that I will never forget. So, Paul, I'm not going to cry over you. Paul Johnston, Fresh Talk Media, I'll just say thank you so much. And for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.